This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. If there's one thing we can say about the 2020 election, it's that it was a very notable year for Michigan voters. What we wanted to know is where presidential and party lines shifted over the past 4 years. In 2016, Donald Trump pulled off what was then a surprise victory in Michigan because of several key demographics. So who changed their mind in 2020? Here to talk about the early election results and where we go from here are Mark Grubner with Practical Political Consulting, based in East Lansing, longtime observer of Michigan politics, and we should say he's also an Ingham County Commissioner, registered Democrat. Hey, Mark.
Howdy.
And also with us today, Angela Ocampo, Assistant Professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Michigan. Angela, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what is your first blush takeaway from what happened last week? I just wondered, you know, what was your big reaction to who turned out and maybe who didn't? Angela, would you mind starting us out?
Sure. I mean, I think for me, the biggest reaction and takeaway from last week's election and, you know, the results is that the American people really voted in large numbers. And I think the increase in turnout was expected. But I think that we, in many ways, have seen that this turnout is reflective of the current times that we're in. I think also main takeaway for me is the impact of minority voters and voters of color in the state of Michigan, but also throughout the country.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing you're talking about the impact in Wayne counties. Any place else where you feel like that was a factor?
Yeah, I think this was also the case, I think, in Kent County Wayne County as well. But I think we also have to think about voters of color, obviously Black voters, Latinx voters, but also Muslim and Arab American voters in the state.
Sure. Mark, how about you? What was the big impression the election night made on you?
I was startled that things were so close in Michigan. It didn't feel that way to me that Trump and the Republicans were really that competitive. And obviously, they were quite competitive in Michigan and quite competitive nationally. One would have thought that running as bumbling a campaign as President Trump did, that he would have disqualified himself. Maybe 50 years ago, we would have seen a landslide in this kind of a situation. And instead, we saw really a very close election.
I'm sorry I'm not able to cite the source on this right now, but I remember seeing an article in the weeks right before election that Republican new voter registration was up quite a bit. What do we take away from that? What does it mean that Donald Trump is a turnout agent for Republicans as much as, if not more, than he'd ever been?
There was some question about whether that is a real phenomenon or not. I think we're going to have to wait until we have accurate data about who actually registered to vote late. We won't have that for several weeks when the state compiles it. The reason that it may have been a mirage is that there was a very hotly contested Democratic presidential primary back in March, and that had a tendency to accelerate voter registration on the Democratic side. So it may be that what we were really seeing was that the available pool of people who were not registered to vote was predominantly Republican, just as a sort of an artifact of the calendar. But it might be that really Trump did motivate a very substantial number of people who are not really plugged into the political process and who are not regular voters, who just don't really implement their opinions by voting. They implement their opinions in other ways. And it may be that there were so many of those that is a part of why the election ended up being so close, as I said.
Yeah. Now, a few counties flipped from blue to red, but really not very many. Angela, you noted that Kent County went through some change. Where are some other spots that Joe Biden did well that Hillary Clinton did not do so well back in 2016?
Yeah. So I think, you know, one important thing to notice is just to think about so many different counties in the state where, even though they will continue to be red, the margin of the difference, right, sort of the difference between Biden and Trump was more narrow, right? So a lot of these counties still went Republican. And these are, for example, some of the northern Michigan counties. We can think of like Grand Traverse County and Antrim County and some of these other larger northern counties that still went, you know, majority for the Republican for Trump, but the vote difference was more narrow, right? And it was more narrow this time around than last time. And it was more narrow again in the favor of Biden. And so, you know, I think it's sort of interesting to think, right, how so many of the maybe in places where we didn't expect some of this margin to become more narrow, where it did happen. And of course, we, again, you know, saw important changes in Kent County and in Wayne County and also Oakland County.
Mark, tell me about the counties that you were paying attention to where there was definitely some flipping.
Well, again, as Professor Ocampo said, I'm not attracted to the idea that that a county that changes from just under 50% to just over 50% for one party is a particularly important county. What's important is the amount of movement, even if it stays underwater or if it was already above water. So for me, there were about three important trends all going on, and we saw most of these are continuations from the past. We saw that Biden greatly reduced Trump's newfound strength in among working class whites. We saw that Biden continued to strengthen the Democratic position among highly educated and wealthier whites. And we saw a surprising deterioration of Biden's or of the Democratic strength among minority communities. Not a huge deterioration, but it was certainly nothing that we were looking toward. We saw that the Republican strength in Black and Hispanic and Arab communities in Michigan was several percentage points weaker than had been expected. So all these things come together and you end up with an electorate which moves Democratic by just 2 or 3 percentage points, which is, of course, changing from a tiny Republican lead to a small but significant Democratic advantage.
Angela, I wanted to talk to you about one of the points in which voters found themselves very divided. And it's not really surprising, but I guess the question is, what does it suggest about the future? There was some exit polling conducted in Michigan, I believe by the AP, that was quoted by the New York Times, in which voters were asked to talk about serious problems in American society and were asked, you know, the degree to which race is an issue. And there's just this huge divide between Republicans and Democrats. The results that I'm looking at show that 81% of Democrats in this one exit poll said that it is a most important issue, just 15% of Republicans. What do you make of that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I mean, I think part of those results really stem from who are the voters that make up, you know, the majority of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, right? So in many ways, it makes sense that that number is quite low for Republicans, given that we know that the Republican base tends to be majority white, and we know that the Democratic base, it tends to be more majority. It includes a lot of people of color. I think, you know, sort of at the same time, I would, you know, sort of be wary of a lot of these exit polls, primarily because in many ways they do also tend to undersample minority voters, right? And even in the state of Michigan, they only include not even a few hundred, right? And so I guess in many ways it is really interesting, I think, reflective to think about where the disagreement obviously comes from, a different partisan understanding, but the partisan understanding is also sort of a racial understanding, right? That most Democrats do see this as a major issue, and it does contribute to, you know, it heightened polarization that we see on a lot of other different issues between Democrats and Republicans.
I wanted to change gears a little bit and talk about what the results tell you both about how people were feeling in Michigan. Mark, you noted that the Republicans definitely put up some ground game and had a decent showing this year, considering, even though they lost the presidency. What do you take away about the mood of voters from all that?
Well, we saw almost no ticket splitters in Michigan. Looking back at the last few decades, Michigan has a reputation nationally of being a state with a substantial number of people who split their tickets, who are in the middle of the spectrum and determine elections by moving from one party to the other. And we saw very, very little evidence that anybody is willing to discuss voting across party lines, that the electorate is really divided almost cleanly into Democrats and Republicans.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, can we say that when we have the example of Kent County, where the electorate went for Joe Biden for president, but also elected Peter Meyer, or also the fact that the Michigan House and Senate remain under Republican control, even though Biden got a win? Can we really say there's no ticket splitting?
Well, in the first place, Peter Meyer's district includes parts of two other counties, which are more Republican, and does not include all of Kent. I think that he may have, if he had been in all of Kent and included the rest of the county, I think he would have lost the county just as Trump did, because he was only running about 2 percentage points different in each precinct than the president was. I mean, so it's one of these situations where somebody wins or loses a county, but there isn't that much going on. The districts were drawn very carefully by the Republican legislature 10 years ago to make it so that the whatever Democratic strength there is in Kent County was divided between two districts, and so the rest of Kent goes into a Republican district to the west. But yes, I don't think that for any candidate on either ticket that they were able to run very far away from their ticket. In other words, you couldn't run 10 percentage points better than the Republicans did if you were a Republican candidate. You might run one or two. In the past, we've often seen people run 10 and 15 and even 20 percentage points from their tickets, because people might say, well, he's a Republican, but he really feels this way or that way about the issue I care about. There was very little of that this year.
Hmm. Angela, what's your takeaway on how voters were feeling this year?
I think voters were really just worried about the pandemic, right? Voters were worried about the state of the economy. I think voters were also worried about issues either, you know, on the Republican side, how the issues frame around crime and law and order, on the Democratic side about issues of racial justice. And I think these were some of the issues that were at the top of the mind of these voters, and these voters obviously in the state. And I think in many ways it is sort of interesting. I think, you know, at the same time, we really think about the way in which the pandemic has affected the state and how this, you know, I keep going back to it because oftentimes we kind of forget, right? Like, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. I think we've all been so obviously very consumed with the election and the election returns. But I think this really has overshadowed in many ways a lot of the other issues that could have been in people's minds. And I think that this is probably and was probably one of the main concerns of people in the state on both sides of the aisle.
You know, this brings me to another question. The shock in 2016 among many voters was about polls. They thought that Hillary Clinton was definitely going to beat Donald Trump. They thought that was what the polls were showing them. And it turned out that polls were not quite being used in the way that really helped people predict the outcome of the Electoral College. I'm wondering if either of you learned anything about polling results this year that you didn't know after 2016. Mark, do you have thoughts?
Well, I do a fair amount of polling. My firm we specialize in what no one will believe I really say this, but we specialize in inexpensive, really second-rate polling. We do very bad polling. We do everything wrong, and so we can turn it in for a price that startles people how cheap we are.
What exactly, could you unpack what bad polling means in this context?
Well, I don't mean that all polls are bad. I just mean that my firm does bad polls. We have very small sample sizes. We only call landlines. We only ask two or three or four questions. We cut every possible corner, and that allows us to deliver a finished poll as cheap as $500. So everybody else charges 10 or 20 or 50 times as much, and they do a much better job. So I'm speaking from the perspective of having just finished about 50 polls in the state. And so I learned quite a bit from our results. And one of the most important things I learned was Republicans were simply unwilling to answer polls. They didn't misrepresent their views, I don't think, but they simply declined to answer the poll. So all polls had a tendency to pick up supporters of Biden more easily than we could pick up supporters of Trump.
Angela, did you pick up anything this election cycle about polling that you think would be useful going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things that for me was really interesting is just how there is a heavy reliance on polls, right? But polls are only, they only allow us to get estimates, and they're estimates at best, right? They don't necessarily tell us the sort of the true support for either candidate. They're going to be an approximation. They're never going to be sort of the true value. Even though we might try to reach out to people, right, on both Democrats and Republicans, if you don't have a response, right, then there's going to be a limited sort of representation of a particular group or demographic in a poll. And I think it's sort of interesting what was said earlier about thinking about it's harder to get Republicans on the phone, right? And so I think after 2016, there was a sort of a conversation as to and questioning as to whether or not it was sort of the shy Trump supporter that was maybe a result for why we're getting, why the polls really missed in trying to give us a clearer picture in 2016. But we find that that necessarily wasn't the case. And one of the major issues was that it wasn't that we're being shy about their support for Trump, but it was that a particular demographic, which were white, low education voters, were underweighted in many of the samples, right? And so, you know, this obviously can happen in the weighting procedure, but it also can happen when people are not answering the phones, right? So you're not even capturing them to begin with in your polls. And so I think, it will be interesting moving forward to see like which particular demographic was not necessarily kind of quite well captured in the polls, right? Like which intersection of these demographics and sort of how this might give us a better picture as to, you know, we actually may need to do more of a blended sample between landlines and cell phones and online, right? I think thinking about the format and the mode, right? We're not necessarily capturing anymore, right? We're not doing a lot of these probability-based polls anymore. And we're relying a lot on these sort of online convenient panels. So this really skews the results and sort of skews, and it gives us a different type of data. So I think a lot of pollsters and a lot of political scientists are going to be really thinking about, you know, the kind of data that we're actually capturing in the months to come.
Angela Ocampo is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Michigan. We've also been talking with Mark Grebner of Practical Political Consulting. He's also an Ingham County Commissioner. Mark, Angela, thank you so much for sharing some thoughts with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.